Do you have a problem with your memory? I have a couple of things written on the back of my hand. One of them is WizKids, because I had to get, most of all, I had to get that wee ad in tonight, okay? The other one is Peter Football, because I have to take some guys to a football tournament tomorrow morning, which is a lovely thing because it's part of the school, and they've asked me to take part. That's all. I see that all part of wee bricks in the wall of touching Kirkcaldy. Okay, so that's what I've written. Now, but there was one day I wrote DA on my hand, and I wondered all day who Da was. And then when I found out later on I'd missed my dental appointment, I knew what it was all about. Fred had a problem with it. He was getting on in years, and his memory was giving him bother. So he had been getting some help with this, and he was out with his wife and another elderly couple. And the other man was asking him about this memory thing, and he said, "Fred, you've been going along to this clinic. How's it been?" And Fred said, "It's been a real, really great help to me." He says, "Excellent. Some of the things they've taught me there, how to remember, is fantastic." And his friend said, "Fred, what's the name of the clinic?" And Fred took a total blank, and he said, "And then he thought, let's do this the way they taught me." And he thought of the psychological techniques they taught him how to do it, and he thought of visualization and association. And he said to his friend, he said, "That flower with the long stem with the thorns on it, what is it?" And he said, "You mean rose, Fred?" And he said, "Rose, that's the very thing. Thank you for that." And he turned to his wife and he said, "Rose, what's the name of that clinic I go to?" So, loss of memory is a wonderful thing. And when I read Daniel, it reminds me of something I forget all the time. What's your first priority in life? Devotion to God. Devotion to God. Not only comes if you're a Christian when you've met the Lord Jesus Christ and you're in a relationship with him, because he died on the cross to save you, to take away your sin, to bring you into a relationship with God where God sees you as righteous and his child. But there's something about this Old Testament story before the cross that blows my mind, that a man could love God so much that it should put us people as Christians to shame. Daniel's whole orientation in life is just to love God. The center of this passage is about when he goes home and gets down on his knees, and it says, as he always had done before. You know? So tonight, very quickly, because I know youth have a thing after this, and it will be quickly, and I thought, just read the story. It's powerful. You know, this is a God that can do anything. And we have the opportunity to spend time with him. We easily forget to spend time with God. Daniel reminds us to do that, for he never forgot to do it. So here's a few things I want you to get from Daniel's devotion. His exceptional qualities. It says there in verse 3 that he had exceptional qualities. He was distinguished. He stood out. He was exceptional because he was the exceptional. He was the exception to the all. He did things differently. He decided to follow God. He swam against the current. He loved God, not the world. We've been doing 1 John recently. 1 John 2:15 says, "Do not love the world or anything in the world. For if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. The things of the world pass away, but the man who loves the Lord will live forever." And so often we're caught up with the things of the world, but not Daniel. He could have been, Daniel could have had a Ferrari, a Ferrari Camel at that, but, you know, he could have had anything he wanted. Imagine, this was a mega superpower. You've been doing, Daniel, just last chapter you found out that Belshazzar, King Belshazzar, the writing was on the wall for him. It was all over, and this is a new guy in town, and this new guy in town is much more powerful than Belshazzar was. The kingdom is the biggest kingdom superpower that there's ever been. And it's amazing that God is always on the scene, because there were 120 satraps picked. And then three administrators, and it says, and one of them was Daniel, God's man at the very center of it. And not only that, but God's man is going to move to the top. Distinguished. He could have had anything. But his exceptional qualities set him apart, and his exceptional qualities derive from his devotion to God. He loved God, not the world. He was a forever liver. The man who loves the will of God will live forever. He wasn't living just for this world. He was living for the world to come. This is just the short, but by the way, I was talking about forgetfulness. A minister asked a lady one day, did she believe in the hereafter? She says, all the time, Pastor, she said. I go up the stairs and I say to myself, what am I here after? So, but, you know, this is the short bit. Talking about forgetfulness, Peter says this, but do not forget this one thing, that with the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years like a day. And what he's saying to the people is, catch on. This is the short bit of life. There's a bit of life coming that lasts forever. Live for it. And Daniel could have lived for the present, but he didn't. He lived for God. He was devoted to God. He was exceptional in judgment, exceptional in his wisdom, exceptional in his insight, exceptional in his truthfulness, and he was exceptional in his commitment. And all this, the text infers to us, came from his devotion to God. So listen, these are qualities we would like or love to have, aren't they? But do we spend time in God's gym, if you like, developing those muscles in prayer, in Bible study, in devotion to God? And all I'm saying here is, in that first wee bit, that man didn't get that way just by being himself. He got that way spending time with God. So it's exceptional quality. Secondly, his nemesis. In this passage, out of his devotion to God becomes an absolute nemesis. These people, they lead into his downfall. This was the thing. His devotion in God would lead to his seeming downfall. The problem with these qualities was that they led to promotion. Okay, we read it there. His exceptional qualities stood out so much that the king wanted to make him ruler over all the nations. Now, the problem with this is that not only did he catch the favorable eye of the king, but he caught the evil eye of everyone else. And if you want to be serious about being devout in the right sense, having a very deep devotion towards God, let me tell you, the world will not love you. Been learning that in 1 John over and over again. If you love the Lord, the world will hate you. And John is very black and white. When you read 1 John, he's very black and white. If you're not on God's side, John's very clear, you're on the devil's side. And in this story, it's very clear that there's a man of God and it's stacked against him, the whole world. They don't want him at the top. So he had caught the eye of the king, but he also had the eye of the evil people on him. Being righteous, being devout, stirs the hatred of the world. And it really is hatred, because these people just didn't want Daniel to step down and get out of the road. Their plan was to have him killed. He wasn't going down to the lion's den for a picnic. He was going down there and he would die, as far as they were concerned. Devotion became his nemesis, the means of his seeming downfall, okay? Just read verse 7, verse 11, verse 12, verse 13. It all revolves around this man's prayer life. They had caught on that this was a man who was so devout towards God. He loved God. He wanted to spend every moment that he wasn't working, because he gave all to his work. But when he wasn't working, he was sure to be found praying to his God, and they said, if we can't get him on a technicality of his work, if he's not turning in on time, if he's being dishonest about his tax return or whatever it is, and they couldn't find anything, we know we'll get a plan that revolves around his devotion to God. It's a very sneaky plan. It's quite a good one, you know. Let's think of some other way to get this guy, and they had him. He wasn't going to step down. For Daniel, prayer was only for God. They were saying that people should pray to the king and no one else. Daniel was saying people should pray to God and no one else. And he kept at it. Prayer. Prayer. They made it their loophole to get him. He lived for God. The devil was on his back. Lies, hatred, murder. Did you notice in verse 7, the royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict. Do you know what? If you're not telling the truth completely, you are not on good. This is a bit of an aside, but I feel, I don't know why, it just keeps coming back in. So someone listen. If you don't tell the truth fully, you're on the devil's side. There's only one word in this thing that is wrong. It's the word all. It wasn't all of them. Daniel didn't know about it. He didn't sign up to it. So that word all in there shouldn't be in there. It should be the majority of us or most of us, but certainly not all of us. And if you want to tell lies and trap someone, you only have to change a word or two. But listen, God is a God of truth. And he's on the side of truth. So listen, be people of truth. True Christianity is always up against the world's hatred. In 1 John it says this, that this is a message you have heard from the beginning. We should love one another. Do not be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own actions were evil and his brother's were righteous. If you're going to be like a Daniel, believe you me, you're going to be up against it. People do not like righteousness. The world does not like righteousness. Christianity and the world are always going to be they're always going to impact, you know. They're always going to be on a, what is that, to impact. We'll get there. Thank you. There's people preaching down there to me. It's a brilliant interaction. Of course, for impact. So what does a man of God do? His lifestyle. That was his exceptional qualities, his nemesis, and his lifestyle. This man was a man with another country in his heart. Okay? He had a country inside him that just would never go away. When Daniel went home, he went to the upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. The windows opened towards Jerusalem. I was waiting on my daughter I'm not going to say too much because she's here, but she was at a formal the other night, and I had to stay up to 1 o'clock in the morning and then go and pick her up. And while I was waiting, I put the TV on, and there was a lovely film. It was a film called The Visitor. I can't tell you the whole film because you have to get out of here, but this man comes back to his apartment, and he's a lecturer. He comes back to his apartment in New York, and there are two illegal immigrants living in his apartment. Now, they have rented it from somebody who says they own it, but they don't. And it goes on and on. But the thing that hit me was that immigrants are real people. It's a lovely story. Quite a wholesome story. There's a wee bit at the end, so if you get it out and say that guy said it was very wholesome, but there's a wee bit at the end, and it's not bad, but just to warn you, but I'm not saying the whole film's fantastic, but there was this story behind it about immigration, and I just thought, immigrants are real people. got real hearts. This young guy lived in New York, and he was from Syria, and he played this drum. It was the music of his homeland. Although he was in New York, his heart was somewhere else. A lot of the people that come here really, I mean, why would you want to come and live in Northern Ireland if your country was better? I mean, you know, they love their own country, but they can't get on there. There's problems there, and they come here, and they're real people, and they have a heart for home. And Daniel had a heart for Jerusalem. It was more than just his homeland. It was where his God had put his seat. He had a yearning for that place. And when there was trouble in his life, that's where he went, to his upstairs room, and the windows pointed towards Jerusalem, and he prayed to his God. That was his devotion. So when things went wrong in this man's life, he didn't have to change anything. He just did the same thing that he always did. And I suppose one of the real things out of this passage that says to me is you've got to generate that sort of thing in your life when it's good, not try and do it when it's bad. Get into a devotional life with God. Where do your windows of your heart open to Calvary? Is your mind and your heart in touch with heaven? Fix your eyes on the things above, not on earthly things. Paul says, for you died and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Colossians chapter 3. That's our home. That's the land that's within us. That's where we really live. In 1 John, this is a sermon on Daniel, but on 1 John. And 1 John, how great is the love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are. The original in the Greek, and I'm told, that original phrase, how great is the love, would have simply said, from what land is the love the Father has lavished on us? This is love from another country, from another planet, from another land. This is love from another place altogether. And all of John is saying, get in touch, not with the world, but with that other place. And this man, Daniel, was in touch constantly with the windows open to Jerusalem, where his God had put his seat and where he sat, and he was constantly in touch with his God. When the chips were down, nothing changed for Daniel. In verse 10, you'll find that the compass of his heart wasn't scrambled. He knew where to turn. Where do you turn when you're stressed out, when the world's against you, when they're piling it on you, when the devil's on your back? Where do you go? Often I go to other people. I go to other organizations. I go plotting in my head and I go scheming in my heart. A man said to me, you know, he said, I've learned this in life, that when things are really getting me down, the first place is not to go to the phone, but to go to the throne and talk to God, straight into heaven. We often do all sorts of things to sort out our problems. This man who's devoted to God doesn't have to change anything. He just goes back to his God. A friend of mine sent me a text recently. He said, it said on it, Humpty Dumpty might have had a chance if they hadn't let the horses go first. Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall, all the king's horses and all the king's men. So if the horses hadn't piled in there first to have a go at putting them back together, he may have had a chance. And our problem is that often we go that route of doing everything to sort ourselves out, asking other people's opinion, doing all sorts of things. And the last place we go to is to God and get down on our knees and say, Lord, help me with this. But God always does. Where is your heart orientated? What is the beat of the drum in your heart? What is the music of your homeland? Is that where you are connected to? Do you believe you belong to another country? So that was his exceptional qualities, his nemesis, his lifestyle. And finally, and I really will, we're not doing bad here, we're going to wrap up. His reputation. you know what? This man lived close to God. Living close to God really changes everything. I wish I could get a grasp of it more. This sort of story inspires me. I always knew Daniel in the lion's den was one of the big stories in the Bible, you know. And I said to Johnny, it's a different thing knowing it's a good story, but trying to preach on it, it's quite difficult. But if nothing else, this reminds you that if one man decides 100%, I'm going to do this, I'm going to swim against the flow, even the flow of modern evangelical Christians is not to be that devout to God, to get really involved that much, to give it all for Him. We're sort of a bit of a loose bunch. We just sort of hang out for an hour on Sunday morning and go off and do our own thing the rest of the week. And you know, God's not really that high up on our priority list. But if one person in here decides, let's do it, they're always the people in the Bible that history turns on. David. He's just a shepherd boy, but he's decided that it's not sort of an hour on a Sunday morning for me. I'll just sing to him all day long out on the hillside. Joseph, I may be in prison, but I'm not going to let down my guard of devotion to God. I'm just going to keep on hanging in there to believe in Him. Moses, I'm all washed up. It's 40 years. I've wasted the first 40 years of my life in Egypt. I've wasted the next 40 years of my life looking after these sheep. But I've been trying to stay close to God. And one day God appears there when he's 80 years old. So it's never too late to be the man that decides to go against the flow and give it all 100% for God. And then Daniel comes along. Daniel in a foreign land, an immigrant. He could just lie back and go, well, it's all over now. But he goes, no, I'm going to give it 100% of what they asked me to do, but it'll be 100% coming out of 1,000% of devotion to God. And do you know what? He had a reputation there. Because when the king spoke to him just before he went to the lion's den, he said, Daniel. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, verse 16, may your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you. In the ancient world, it wasn't easy to get close to kings. Believe you me, it's not. I tried to ring the Queen the other day and she just wasn't picking up. But it's not easy to get in touch with the Queen here, nor even William or Harry. But in the ancient days, you didn't dare go near the king. He didn't go walk about and shake people's hands and accept flowers and stuff. He stayed in there. If you want an appointment with him, he made the appointment. You came to see him. It was a case of, don't ring me, I'll ring you. Okay? But Daniel, this guy seems to know the king. He seems to hang out with him. He seems to play pool with him. He seems to do all sorts of things with him. He has the king's ear, and he doesn't waste it, because it seems that continually he's been telling the king, you know my God, you know my God, you know my God, you know this God of mine, he's an exceptional God. And the king knows it, so he has a reputation. And the king says, may this God that you serve continually rescue you. I wonder about you and me, what sort of reputation we have. Now, if you're not totally devoted to God the way he was, you'll not shine like that. So again, I am, as well as myself, I'm challenging you to be different, even in the church. You say, they might think I've gone off the beam here, but why don't you just love God with all your life? That's why you were made. That's what Daniel says to me. There's a whole lot more there, but that's what he's saying, I think. Devote yourself to God. God never lets a man down who devotes himself. Listen to this. This is his testimony. The king said it again in verse 20. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, Daniel, servant of the living God, has God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lion's den? And Daniel answered, testimony time, Daniel answered his testimony. O king, live forever. I think that should read in modern time. O king, chill out. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O King. Here's my testimony. I devoted myself to the Lord. I trust in him. In fact, if you read this story, you don't find Daniel stressed even going into the lion's den. I think I might have been shouting and screaming, but it doesn't mention that about Daniel. He trusts in God, and God doesn't let him down. So there's his testimony. My God has saved me from this. There was a legacy from this man's devotion. The superpower of the time wrote verses 26 and 27 with his own pen. He sent it, a letter out to the whole vast empire of his. Because this man, one man, Daniel, decided to swim against the flow, to do things differently, to put himself on the line and say, I don't care what everybody else is doing, I am going to devote my life to God. The king, the superpower of the time, wrote this: I issue the decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. When I was reading this story, I'm going to finish now in 1 minute, couldn't help think about one person greater than Daniel. Now, when I was in Bible college, they said to me, beware of hairy acrobatical exegesis, okay? So you can't push a whole lot of stuff into this story, but there are some things that jump out of this story. And there's one greater than Daniel. If you don't know Jesus, you need to know Jesus in your life. He stood up against the world, and he went to the cross, and he died on the cross for him. It says in Daniel that a stone was put over the lion's den, and then it was taken away, and he was brought out. Well, your Savior was put in the tomb. A stone was put over it, and he was dead. And he conquered death. And he came out, and he lives forever. And he wants to live his life in you to make you a Daniel sort of person. You can't do it yourself. This living Jesus, far better, greater God himself than Daniel, wants to live his life in you. Let me read you just as I close something Peter says. There's a lion mentioned in this too. Peter says this: humble yourselves therefore under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. You don't have to do this yourself. You don't have to try and become prime minister on your own. Just be devoted to God. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Be self-controlled and alert. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know that your brothers throughout the world are undergoing the same kind of suffering. And the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ, after you have suffered a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast. To him be the power forever and ever. Amen.